Okay, so here we go. So tonight we begin learning about Sefer Shemot. So we turn a new chapter and transition takes place. Sefer Bereishis was a story of the Avos, of our forefathers, and Sefer Shemot begins the formation, the creation of our nation, of the Jewish people. And unfortunately, it starts off pretty horrific. Slavery begins, the promise that we've talked about in Sefer Bereishis of Hashem saying to Avraham that the Yadot Tedak, Iger Yezer Achab, Eretz Olahem, Vavadum Vino Osam, that your children will be strangers in a strange land, and there they will become enslaved and afflicted. So it all begins to unfold as pretty soon as we begin this Sefer. But what's so fascinating and also reassuring is that, and this happens all the time throughout our history, that at the same time disaster begins to strike, redemption also begins at the very same time as well. And redemption here is emerges with the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu. And so, what I want to do this evening is to talk a little bit about, what were there any early signs that we see from Moshe that sort of highlights the fact that why is it that God, many years later, appears to him in this burning bush and says, "You're the one." Like, why Moshe? Like, why is Moshe chosen? Why is Moshe selected? So I want to look at some of the commentaries. Also, I'll share with you an insight from Rabbi Moshe Lichtenstein, who's one of the Rosh Yeshiva. Currently at the end of the Gush, his father was a famous of Aaron Lichtenstein. He has a book on Moshe and leadership. He has a pretty novel approach to understanding that Moshe's early life. But before we get there, let me share with you, I don't watch that many movies, but one of the movies that I've enjoyed since my childhood, and I'm so happy that they started up again in recent years, is Star Wars. And if you're a Star Wars fan, one of the major issues of dispute of machlokas within Star Wars is that someone who is a Jedi, someone who has like all these special powers, is that something that you are naturally born with? That it's innate, it's part of your DNA? Or is it something that anyone can attain, that anyone can achieve it? Is it only for a select group? Is it only for you have to have the yichus to become a Jedi, or no? You could be any person out there, and if you somehow feel the force, you can tap into it. So that analogy, I think, can be used very nicely as to how our commentators understand Moshe Rabbeinu. Was this like a natural gift? Was he like the chosen one? That he was. Darth Vader was the chosen one. Also, he was born with it. That he had Anakin Skywalker had it within him. That he was going to be this great Jedi. The question just was: is he going to use it for the good or for the bad? So, is it something that Moshe was like that was born with, or perhaps no? That it was something that Moshe developed over time. He was no different than the other Jew, but somehow he made certain choices, made certain decisions. Hashem was enamored by, and Hashem therefore selected him to be the leader. And if you think about this, this is a unique question to Moshe. I think we looked at this when we talked about Avram. Why is Avram chosen? Why is he selected? And there we don't really know, right? There the Torah is completely silent as to why Avram is selected. There's many midrashim that fill in the gaps of his early life, but and they all try to suggest reasons why Avram is selected. But here we do know a little bit about his early life. So the first thing we know about Moshe is his birth. Right, we're told about the fact that his mother is a Bas Levi, his father is from the house of Levi, and they have a child. But Tera Oso Kitofu, and immediately we're told they see that he is good. Kitofu, and so Rashi says, Kishinolad. When he was born, according to Gemara and Sota, the Smali Habayis Kulo Ora, the house was filled with light. In other words, this is the Anakin Skywalker. This is the approach in the more recent movies in Star Wars of Rey being a grandchild of Palpatine. That he was born with it. It was in the blood and the DNA that God put him on this world for a purpose. And it was apparent from the moment that he left the womb and he entered this world. This special light filled the room, and he's just destined for it. And so there's not that much more to talk about. You know, why 80 years later, when he's 80 years old, God appears to him at the burning bush? The answer is because when he was born, he'd been predetermined, preselected to be the one. Okay, if that's the case, we can end the shiur. He was born with it. Baruch Hashem, like, it's like, thank God, you know, Hashem, you know, the sheephood was in full force. The servitude, the affliction was ongoing. It was horrific. And God determined now's the time to that someone should be born that ultimately will be the one to I will call upon to lead the people out. He'd been preselected by God. That's the approach of the Chazal, the Gemara and Sota, that Rashi cites. Interestingly here, the Ramban as well as the Rashbam, similarly, they both ask a very like a basic and obvious question. You know, it's like a question on any parent. You know, the pasuk says he's born and they seek ki tofu, that he is good. So right, the Ibn Ezra, for example, says Shehaya Yafem Mara, he was cute, he looked good. Right, his mother was enamored, she was immediately attached to him. But the Rambana says that can't completely be the case, because Yadua ki kol anashim ohovosos b'neim yafim mishino yafim. Every mother loves her child. Right? Every mother loves her child, whether he looks good, doesn't look good, whether he's a cute baby or not a cute baby. Right? If it's your child, you love the child. Of course, you love the child. So what's the Torah telling me? You know, if the Ibn Ezra is correct, you know, she looked at him and saw that he was good. Any mother sees her child and sees that he's good. So the Rambana suggests, Avol Perish Atova Zo Shirasa Bo Tobi Chuda. No, she saw something good with him right from the start. The Chashva Kiara Bo Nes Venitzo. And she assumed that he was going to be saved. She was convinced that this her son, like so many other sons who were killed by the Egyptians, thrown into the sea, she was convinced that her son would be saved. So she had an intuition. Now, the Ramban doesn't really explain exactly what the intuition is. The Rashbam suggests that there was something a little unnatural that took place here, because we know that how long did she hide the baby for before she put him into the Nile? For 3 months. Why did she hide him for 3 months? Because he was born premature, right? The Rashbam suggests. In other words, in the Egyptians, you know, they had on their calendar when they had all the due dates. They spoke to all the OBGYNs, you know, and they knew exactly when every child was going to be born. And Moshe wasn't on the list yet, right? Zion Adar, the seventh day of Adar, was 3 months early, so they weren't even looking. So he's born early, and the Rosh Pam suggests, you know, this is back in the day. Who said he was going to survive? He's so premature. The fact that he survived, says the Rashbam, that's vateraki tofu. There's something unusual about this child. Again, according to basic laws of medicine, maybe should not have made it. Yet this child is breathing and is alive and well. Something unusual here. Something unique about this child. She thinks that maybe there's a possibility that we can save and rescue this child. So in other words, according to Rashi, again, it's sort of like he's born the chosen one. According to Ramban and the Rashbam, there's just something unique. She sees there's an intuition either by the mother, or that there's something miraculous, the fact that he survives this early birth, and there's this possibility that they're able to save them. And we know that, okay, then the story continues, and of course he's placed into the basket in the river. I forget who it is. Maybe it's the Malbim. I didn't look up, but one of the Mephoshim very beautifully explains. You know, you can ask the question: what in the world are they putting him into the river for? Like, you want to guarantee your child dying? Throw him in the river. You know, put him in a basket in the river. So again, one of the Mephoshim suggests very beautifully, is that they knew that the Egyptian women often bathed in the Nile. And the hope was that they would have compassion on a child. Because the hope was that an Egyptian woman would, in fact, find the baby. Whether they knew it would exactly be the daughter of Paro, that's unclear. But that was the hope. The hope was that some Egyptian woman would see the child, hear the cry, and have compassion upon him. And in fact, that's what happened. In fact, the Ramban says that's in fact why Basia saved him. To sort of be, the Ramban sort of said, the fact that he looked good is sort of irrelevant because every mother loves the child. But the Ramban says that, right, again, she hears the child crying. So Ramban suggests, Vulai hisker zeli yofyov. You know why she had compassion upon him? Because Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't probably think of this when we think of the imagery of Moshe, but apparently as a baby, he was a cute baby. That's what Ramban says. Right, we think of Moshe as this tall man with a long beard and a mountain holding the tablets. But once he was a baby, and apparently he was a good-looking baby, and she became enamored by this child. There was this attachment as a woman that she had to this baby, and she had compassion upon the baby. That's the suggestion of the Ramban. Okay, then what happens? So very significant, and there's a very important Ibn Ezra here who really talks about this. But of course, the baby is rescued, and she takes him in. Right, she takes in the child, and so the Ibn Ezra says one of the reasons perhaps why Moshe is selected is because it's important to remember where he was raised. Right, he was raised in the palace of Paro, and on the one hand that's not a good thing. He's far away from his family. He's not in the best of environments, but at the same time, the benefit is that he learned what it means to be a leader. He learned about royalty. He perhaps didn't have he wasn't as so hesitant to approach Paro. He had a connection to the royal family, and therefore, both because of that connection, as well as his learning on the job training of what it means to be a leader, what it means to rule and run a nation. So that was also part of the puzzle of why Moshe is selected, a very significant factor that, you have all these people who are slaves, their whole lives are slaves. How's a slave going to be someone who's going to emerge as a leader? And if you think about even an African American and slavery. So I grew up in Rochester, New York. So one of the leaders in the African American community was this Frederick Douglass, who was a former slave, if I remember correctly. But then he did a lot of learning on his own and education. And I even grew up in Baltimore. I forget the whole story. He became who he was, and he developed such a relationship first with Lincoln, and later with Ulysses S. Grant. Because he was someone who ultimately was able to acclimate himself and to connect with educated people, he was able to learn and to read and to write, and it was because of those skills that he developed he was able to be the effective leader. So Moshe also, again, it was critical for him to grow up in the palace. That was one of the reasons that differentiated himself from everyone else, suggests the Ibn Ezra. Okay, then what happens next? So this is probably the most significant part. Again, so far we've seen, Rashi, either he's just born to be the leader. It's, it's God has sort of put him in, the womb of his mother, Yocheved, and he's God has predetermined that he will be the leader. Or, again, this other possibility that there's something unique about him, that she's intuition, and then this Ibn Ezra, him growing up in the palace. But then what happens next? Vayigdal Moshe v'yetzei el achav. Right, so Moshe grows up, and he goes out to his brothers. And this is very significant, el achav. And the Mefarshim all focus and pick up on the word achav, we generally assume that somehow he knows he's a Jew. He's aware he's a Jew. Again, his mother had been nursing him his first few years, and it must be somehow that connection was kept. Perhaps Basia told him who his real mother is. Again, according to Chazal, Basia even converted. That's why her name is Basia, the daughter of God. That's why the beautiful Chazal, that the reason why she went to the Nile was actually because she was going to Mikvah to convert. That's a very sweet Chazal. But then somehow it seems like he is aware of biologically who he is, that he's a member of the Jewish people, even though he's grown up in the palace of Pharaoh. And he goes out to his brothers. And Vayar v'siv lo sam. And now for the first time in his life, perhaps, he sees firsthand what is happening to them. He sees their pain. He sees their affliction. He may be aware of it. He may have heard of it, some of the Forshim say, in the palace. But, you know, there's a statement that there's no comparison, Shmia Teria. You hear something, and then you see it. Right? You may hear about what happened in Washington today, but then when you see the images of what was happening, then it's frightening. Right? Then it's deeply concerning and scary when you actually see, you know, what transpired. And Moshe, at this point, he is made aware. He sees it's right in front of him what they're enduring. And then we're told, Vayar Ish Mistri, he sees an Egyptian man, Makeh Ishivri Me'achav, who is striking a Jewish man who's his brother. Sounds like he identifies with this his fellow Jew who's being afflicted, who's being harmed. Vayifen Kol V'Kol, famous pasuk, he looks this way and that way, Vayar Kein Ish, he sees that there's no one there. Vayachas Amitri, he strikes the Egyptian, Vayitmeo B'Chol, and he buries him in the sand. And so on the surface, you know, this pasuk is Moshe defending his brother, right? And if you think about it, this was very dangerous, right, for Moshe to do this, possibly. You know, to kill an Egyptian, perhaps this Egyptian is doing what Egyptians are supposed to do. They're supposed to strike, you know, the Jews, right? They're the taskmasters. They're the ones in charge. And yet Moshe, somehow his compassion, his sensitivity, the inner essence of who he is comes to the fore, and he sees that this is wrong, this is not right, and he, to such an extent, I mean, he kills the Egyptian. Right? And he buries him in the sand. Right? That's a simple way of understanding it. It's a very beautiful insight. I think the name is Rabbi Isaac Bernstein of Blessed Memory, who's a rabbi in Great Britain. He has this very powerful insight into this pasuk. He says, "Vayifen kol v'kol v'yar kein ish." He looks this way and that way and sees there's no man. He says, it's not that Moshe was looking around seeing if anyone was watching him, but rather he was looking inside himself. He looks this way and that way, and he's looking, who am I? Am I this person who identifies as an Egyptian, who grew up in the palace of Paro, and that's my adopted family, and then that's who I identify as, an Egyptian? Or do I know where I came from? I know that I'm the son of Yocheved and Amram. I know I'm the brother of Moshe and Miriam. I know I'm a fellow Jew of these Jews who are being persecuted. And he's trying to figure out, who am I at this moment? Vayar Kein Ish, but he realizes I can't be both. That's not a man. Right, sometimes in life you can, you know, sort of play both sides. You can sort of walk a tightrope, and you know, you can act one way in one circumstance and one interaction a different way with someone else. But sometimes you got to make a choice. Sometimes you have to stay clearly who you are and define yourself. And at this moment, Moshe realizes he can't be both at this moment. Either identify with his Egyptian striking the Jew, or identify with the Jew as the victim. I have to choose who I am. And to this moment, he declares, I'm a Jew. Right? I identify with Me'achav, identify my brothers. And at that point, he acts, he strikes the Egyptian, and he buries him in the sand. Then what happens? Vayetzei b'yom ha'sheni. Then he goes out on the second day. Now, it's interesting. Doesn't he goes out the next day, says the second day, which this Rabbi Lichtenstein points out that clearly these 2 days are connected. Right, there's day one and there's day two. Right, this day two is connected to the previous day. Not that he went out tomorrow, says he went out on the second day. And there are two Jewish men who are fighting. Bayomer LaRasha, and he says to the wicked one, now how he knows one's wicked and one's not, that's unclear. Lama Takeri Echa, why are you striking Re Echa, your friend? Bayomer, and the response is, Misam Chali Ishar Vel Shafelayim, who made you the ruler over us? Moshe, you think you're the ruler? You're not the ruler. Who made you the ruler and jewel and judge over us? Halagedi Ataomer, Kasher Rakta Asamitri? Are you going to kill me like you killed the Egyptian? Vayira Moshe Mo, and Moshe became exceedingly afraid. Achein no da davar, now the matter is known. Now this pasuk, or series of pasuk, begs further explanation as to what is happening here. Again, the simple, way of understanding this, the way, you're taught in school, is that Moshe sees two Jews fighting. The Chazal have a tradition, this is Dastan and Aviram, they're always getting into trouble, and they're not interested in hearing, Moshe rebuking them. And all of a sudden, Moshe discovers that they know that word is out that he's killed the Egyptian. Now he realizes his life is in danger. The Egyptians are going to go be after him. And he runs away for safety, not to get to flee to Egypt. And then next time we find Moshe, he winds up at a well. He sees some women in trouble, winds up helping them out. They bring him home. The father-in-law, the Yisrael, the future father-in-law, is so enamored, and he gives him the Tzipporah as a daughter. They get married, and before you know it, he appears with a burning bush, and everyone lives happily ever after. But the story Lichtenstein says, and others say as well, that there's more here that's going on. And Rabbi Lichtenstein's suggestion is that perhaps what was happening at this moment is that Moshe at an early age, and there's actually a debate as to how old he is at this moment. Does we know how old he is when he comes back? He's 80 years old when he comes to Paro. But how old is he at this moment when he goes out and kills the Egyptian and then intervenes with these two Jews who are fighting? So it's unclear. Chazal, one school thought he was 20, another school thought he was 40. He's at a relatively young age, and at this point in his life, perhaps he's already assuming qualities of leadership, as these two people point out. Are you a sar shofet? Are you a ruler and judge over us? And Rilson goes as far as to say that perhaps Moshe was trying to get the people to rise up. That Moshe, by killing the Egyptian, it was intentional that he killed the Egyptian. That he wanted to wake up his brothers and sisters and tell them what you're experiencing is abnormal. You need to stand up. Right? You need to be the modern Israeli who's not going to take it anymore and is going to just be proactive, be like the Maccabees and take your future into your own hands. And what happens, there's a debate. Jews are fighting and just arguing back and forth. Whether or not they should join Moshe's cause and to join him. And what happens is that perhaps Moshe gets a little disillusioned because it's the Jews wind up fighting with each other, right? They wind up not just having a civil debate, but they're actually there's evil, there's vicious, but Yomer the Russia. There's terrible strife that is occurring amongst the Jews. And Achein Noda Davar doesn't mean that, oh, now the Egyptians know, now I'm going to get caught. He knew the Egyptians knew what happened. In fact, maybe he wanted them to know. But now I know, what do I know? Now I know that the Egyptians, I'm sorry, that the Jews are not ready, but that my fellow Jews are not interested. And it's at this, in other words, what's happening is that Moshe already at this young age is assuming leadership. That Moshe is trying to help his people out, and he's trying to get them out at this very moment. But perhaps the people are not ready. They're not interested. They cannot hear it. They're fighting amongst themselves. Maybe they're not deserving of it. Maybe that's what he realized. Achein Odva, now when the matter is known, that they're not, the time is not ripe, that God is not going to redeem them. And what does Moshe do at this moment? And this is a criticism, you know, of Moshe on some level, but it's, I think, also something very fascinating to we'll wrap up with this. He runs away. He gives up. Not that he's fleeing from the Egyptians, but he's running away from his own people. And he goes to the house of Yisro. We once again, and this requires, I think, some deeper understanding as well. You have the well scene where Moshe, again, we see how much he cares about people, right? He when he sees injustice, right, the daughters of Yisro, how they're being pushed about. Not only does he drive off the other shepherds, but even fills, the Torah then says he has compassion and he fills the water as well. He doesn't just help. He doesn't only saves them from the shepherds. He then sticks around to assist them. So you see Moshe fighting for justice. You see Moshe, the compassion that he has, but he's not going back to Egypt. He gets married. And the very listening says, like, very fascinating. You know what? You know why he stays with Yisro? Because Yisro is a loner. Yisro himself is someone who, there's a powerful medrash also, Gemara and Sota, which says that when the word got out that Paro was considering killing the Jews, he had three advisors. Right? Bilam said to kill the baby kids. Eov was Job was indifferent. And Yisro ran away, and that's Yisro's pattern. He runs away from problems, right? When Moshe later on tells Yisro that Yisro came in the wilderness and we're going to Israel, like Yisro is he all of a sudden he doesn't necessarily join them, right? He says, I'm going back home. Now Yisro is maybe he's also given up on humanity, and Moshe feels comfortable in the home of Yisro. That's where he's at. You know, he's not convinced that anything will change. And that explains why God has such a hard time at the burning bush. In other words, now 40, 60 years later, when now Hashem is determined that now is the time for redemption, God has heard the cries of the Jews and the time of redemption has arrived. And Moshe is the one, again, either because of Rashi, because Moshe has been selected from birth, or because Moshe has developed leadership qualities, he's grown up in the palace of Paro, he's demonstrated it early on in his life that he's willing to stand up for his people and try to motivate them to join a cause. And God says, you're the one. But now all these years later, now God is going to select Moshe. Moshe needs a lot of convincing because he gave up. He had it. After all these years, he tried once. I'm not going to try again. And so, I think one of the takeaways from this, is number one, appreciating, that Moshe developed these qualities over time, and that Moshe really worked and to become and take charge and to try to lead his people. Moshe identified as a Jew. Moshe was a compassionate person, both for this Jew who's being struck by the Egyptian, as well as these people he doesn't know, these women at the well who he helps out, that he had that innate quality within him. But also, Moshe perhaps initially gave up too quickly. And I think that that's like a powerful lesson the Torah is also, sharing with us. That, often in life, we have big ideas, and we have dreams, whether it's for our children, whether it's our grandchildren, whether it's for community, for whatever it is, business, and things don't always work out initially, and there's setbacks and there's failures, and the question is, are you going to sort of pick up the pieces and try to move on? Are you going to try again? Are you going to learn from your past mistakes? And recognize that there still can be future opportunities ahead of you. Are you not going to just run away, and hide from your problems and get frustrated and say, this is not for me? Or are you going to say, if this didn't work out when I was 20, now that I'm 80 years old, maybe now's the moment, right? That Moshe's life is similar to Avram. Avram's life really only began when he was 75. Moshe, you know, it's only when he's 80. It's never too late. It doesn't matter what stage you are in life. It doesn't matter what happened in the past. Learn from the past, and you're wiser after all those failures and mistakes over time. But if you're going to become so ambivalent, and then you're going to be upset, and you're just going to throw in the towel, and that's not what life is. Right? God gave us a certain amount of years, and then until your last breath, we can accomplish great things. And it's often those skills that we learn early on that we're going to need later in life, but we can't allow them to go to waste, right? And we put in the effort time and time again, and that you never know when the moment is going to arrive. When that burning bush is going to appear before you, and you're going to hear God's clarion a call. You may have thought that it should have happened 20 years earlier. Well, maybe that wasn't in the cards. It's not what God had envisioned. But now that you're 75, now that you're 80, wherever you are in life, now is the moment that God is calling you, and you're going to get out of that funk, and you're going to say, okay. I've learned all these things over life. I've developed these skills, and now's the time to try again. So we learn a lot about Moshe and his leadership, throughout the rest of the Torah. But you see, he already began to hone his skills early on, and he we almost lost Moshe. All right, he almost gave up too soon. We have to thank God for God's perseverance, right? But I think, and with this, but maybe God is doing that with us always as well. Maybe there's signs that we don't always pick up upon that, that there are burning bushes before us at different junctures in life. God is beckoning us to rise, to the moment, and not to be so despondent and to have given up early on, but to sort of strengthen ourselves, reawaken ourselves and recognize that, I'm here. I have skills, I have capabilities, and now is the time for me to bring about redemption. Now, for myself, for my family, my community, my nation, my world. We never know when it can happen. The point is, al titayish, don't give up, right? And keep on moving forward. Learn from Moshe and be encouraged by God's perseverance. And when the moment comes, jump at it, and hopefully you'll succeed. And if you don't, then hopefully there are going to be more opportunities that are going to lie ahead. Okay, I wish everyone enjoy the rest of your week, and have a good Shabbos, and I'll see you soon.